This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Coffeehouse Shots from Tory Conference in Manchester. I'm joined by Katie Balls, and it's been a kind of classic opening day. Boris Johnson interview on the Mar show, and then speeches from the party chairman and the foreign secretary from the conference stage. Katie, you were in the studio when Boris Johnson was giving his interview on Mar. What do you think his message was, and what do you think his mood was?
I think it's an interesting one because we're here in Manchester, and it is probably the first Tory conference for, say, 4 or 5 years where the party has not been in a crisis of its own. Yet you look around and we see fuel shortages, we're hearing of Christmas being at risk, and therefore it's a point where Boris Johnson seems in a fairly positive mood, but he also had to deal with the fact that there are lots of problems around him, even if his poll rating is strong and he has the support of his party. So I think for Boris Johnson, what we saw from that interview was he was really trying to push the point that, yes, we're seeing labour shortages, particularly in terms of drivers, and that is having difficult consequences for lots of people across the country in terms of fuel shortages and other, but this is part of a journey we are on, which is going to be mean that there are higher wages for workers. And I think you could start to see how almost ministers and Boris Johnson is almost beginning to articulate it, are thinking that this move to higher wages could be a part of levelling up, could be something to sell to voters. And I think we saw both Boris Johnson starting to say that, but also the tension within it through the interview. We also learned about pigs and the fact that Boris said they would have to die, whereas I think the point from Andrew Marr was that you could have a situation where pigs are killed and no one gets to eat them. There was some classic deflection coming from Boris Johnson too. What struck out for you?
I'm very struck by how the Tories are leaning into this argument about the supply chain shortages. You know, you saw Kwasi Kwarteng doing it in an interview with Conservative Home, Boris Johnson doing it in his interview with The Times, and again on Marr saying, you know, the plus side to this is that Labour is getting paid more, and it's not going to go back to the model of uncontrolled immigration, e.g., in other words, free movement, to deal with it. So I think this is bold in two ways. I think the first is that, you know, so far the government has paid no political price for the petrol crisis. I mean, that is emboldening ministers, that the fact the public don't seem to be blaming them for the disruption. But I think it could be a different question if you get kind of Christmas disrupted, and if it turns out that this transition is not a kind of matter of 1 week, but several months. People's attitudes could change. And the second question is, what are the price consequences of this? You know, Boris Johnson very much wanted to talk about wages, but we saw in the 70s, and definitely a contributing factor to inflation in that decade, was that workers assumed there was going to be lots of inflation. And so when they went in to argue for pay increases, their inflation expectations were such they always wanted an above-inflation increase. That's one of the things that contributed to the spiral of inflation then. You know? And there are some, you talked about this on the podcast before, there are some eerie parallels with the 70s, which is, you know, 70s inflation is essentially caused by the oil price shock. You've got energy prices heading up to global highs around the world at the moment, with the UK particularly hit, and you've got this issue of workers demanding higher wages. You know, what are the inflationary consequences of that? I think the political bet he is taking is that if wages rise in real terms, e.g. faster than inflation, he will be able to say to the public, look, you voted in 2016 and 2019, as he said on Mar, to basically strengthen the bargaining position of Labour, to move away from an economic model that was perceived to work for London and the South East rather than the rest of the country. And that is now happening. But it's a big gamble that you can get through the choppiness and the bumpiness that seems inevitable if that is going to happen.
Now, elsewhere, James, we've had Liz Truss giving her speech to a Conservative Party conference this afternoon, the new Foreign Secretary, and it certainly gave us a flavour of what she wants to do in the Great Office of State, but there was one word that was missing.
Europe or the EU? Liz Truss listed a whole bunch of countries that the UK wanted to work with, the G7, NATO, unsurprisingly for Truss, Asia and Pacific partners such as Japan and South Korea and Australia, India, and then the Visegrad 4, the Baltic 3, but there was no mention of the EU specifically. Now, you can argue that nearly all EU countries were covered in some respect because they are a member of NATO. But I think it was revealing of the fact that the UK and the EU haven't worked out how to cooperate together on foreign policy. And I mean, this debate often turns into, should the UK and the EU have the same foreign policy? And I think what's revealing is the list of partners the UK hopes to work with, none of them have exactly the same foreign policy as the UK. They're just like-minded allies with whom the UK should want and try to influence the world. And I think that both the UK and the EU need to kind of slightly get over the Brexit vote. Because in lots of cases, their interests are actually, they actually have interests in common, and they should find a way to work together to advance those interests in common. Now, that doesn't mean that they're always going to have the same policy on every single question. But if you look at an issue such as Belarus, I think you see something interesting, which is you can make a case that the UK can move faster and quicker, and it actually leads to the EU getting into a better position than it might otherwise have done if Brexit had not happened. I mean, there is a definite case to be made for that. But I think you also can't ignore from the British point of view that the position that the EU then took was also important. So we should see the EU as a like-minded ally that we will work with when we think it advances our national interest in the broadest sense of the word, because our national interest obviously involves, as Truss was saying in her speech, you know, the promotion of freedom and democracy and human rights and the like around the world.
And James, we're talking about the Tory party, but another feature of this Manchester party conference is Andy Burnham. The Metro Mayor for Greater Manchester is taking quite an active interest in the conference. I think he's participating in a few events, and he was also speaking on the Mars show this morning. And what's striking is I think we're going to be talking about levelling up a lot during this conference. I've been at one event already where that was the main topic. And Metro mayors, yes, Tory mayors, clearly, like Andy Street, want to be a part of it. But we're also hearing from Andy Burnham an offer to work with the government, which seems to go quite far against the line from Keir Starmer at Labour conference. So do you think this is something that Michael Gove is going to want to take Andy Burnham up on? Do you think we're going to see much cross-party work? Or at the end of the day, is this going to become political very quickly?
I think that at the moment it is in both Michael Gove and Andy Burnham's interest to kind of continue this political bromance, because for Andy Burnham, it's a hope of, you know, getting some more power and some more money from the government. If you look at Ben Houchen in the Tees Valley, you can clearly see the benefits of a close working relationship with the government. And we also know that Andy Burnham wants more power over certain issues. In Michael Gove, he clearly sees an ally on that stuff. And from the point of view of Michael Gove and the Tory party, there is obviously a bonus to the fact that you've got the Labour mayor of Greater Manchester basically suggesting that the government's levelling up agenda is serious, not trivial in the way that Keir Starmer's trying to suggest Boris Johnson was.
Particularly when we hear that Labour shadow cabinet ministers have been advised not to use the phrase levelling up.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought it was quite striking. That was a moment on the Mars show this morning which jumped out to me when Andrew Marr was trying to push Andy Burnham on what he thought of Keir Starmer's leadership. And Andy Burnham said, "Robert, come on, we've got an important conference this week to talk about." And he was talking about the Tory conference. And I thought that was a kind of a slightly revealing moment. And I think it is a very interesting question, because these mayors obviously are more interested in their locality than they are in the national party politics. And I think it'll be very interesting to see quite how far this political bromance between Michael Gove and Andy Burnham goes. Because I think really, if levelling up is really going to succeed, one of the things it is going to have to involve is lots of devolution down to figures such as Metro mayors. You know, I think if you look at where you could get success in terms of bringing inward investment in or coordinating policies on skills or transport, it's because you've got a mayor who can bring people together and get stuff done. And I think that will be a very interesting theme, I think, of the next few years, which is, you know, how much do Michael Gove and the mayors get together? And you can quite clearly see that the mayors want from Michael Gove more power and an ally to get more money out of central government. I mean, how much road is there in that relationship?
And just finally, the other big theme, I think, of Boris Johnson's interview this morning was tax. Now, Boris Johnson didn't really want to talk about tax. Andrew Marr definitely did. And this idea that the Tory party can no longer call itself the, you know, the party of low taxation. And Boris Johnson wouldn't rule out future tax rises, not even in the budget that's coming up. He said he wouldn't want to do it, but we have heard that before. One of the themes I think we're going to get from this conference, I've heard a little bit today from Graham Brady talking at a few fringes, is concerns over spending and tax. Do you think, despite the fact the Tories are, you know, riding high in the polls, in this power position, that could be one of the tricky parts of the conference for Boris Johnson?
Yeah, I think in the, I mean, look, the conference from the main conference podium, and it's a very controlled space at Tory conference. But I think on the fringe and in the bars, what you'll hear lots of people talking about is, yes, we got this majority of 80, they will say. Yes, the Tory party has this majority of 80. Yes, we're out in the polls, they'll say. But what is the purpose of this government? That, I think, is the kind of question. And Number 10 are very keen to say the purpose of this government is levelling up. The problem is that lots of Tories fear that just means taxing the South to spend more in the North, or they're not quite sure what it means. So, alongside the challenge of answering that question, I mean, they also will want some reassurance that there is a grudging acceptance in the Tory ranks of the decision to increase national insurance to basically try and clear the NHS backlog. And I mean, there is a grudging acceptance of that, but I think that people want to know that this isn't going to become a pattern.
Thank you, James, and thank you for listening. And while we have you here, do check out, if you are at Party Conference, our full list of events. Just go to www.spectator.co.uk/conference-events. That includes my lunchtime chat tomorrow with Ben Houchen and Jake Berry, amongst others, and many more.